Let's move on to item number five, and we will entertain a report from our State Water Resources Control Board liaison, Stephen Moore.
Good morning, Chair Young, members of the board. I'm Steve Moore, member of the State Water Resources Control Board, and honored to be your liaison member of the board. And wanted to wish everyone here a happy holiday season. And start out, I'm so impressed with your impressions of the WQCC. I appreciate you taking time to highlight that effort. Vice Chair Fran Spivey Weber will be thrilled to hear my report back to her about your impressions, because she works very hard to organize those. And I think I'll circle back to the WQCC in my remarks a little bit. And I wanted to thank you for inviting me to join board members and Executive Officer Harris and Monica was there, staff, in a tour of the Elkhorn Slough on November 15th. As Chair Young noticed, I enjoyed that thoroughly because of my background in estuarine management and science. And I was just, there was so much going on there at Elkhorn Slough. I can only touch, the high level, but just, the partnership of the foundation with the local growers was very impressive. Working together with science and agriculture. I was impressed by some of the challenges of water quality there in the slough that relate to circulation, and we see these issues in San Francisco Bay Area as well, where transportation infrastructure that's been there a long time actually makes it hard to meet water quality standards where to allow enough circulation for oxygen and other indicators to stabilize. So they're not alone. We see this all over the state, and those are great opportunities all over the state when the transportation infrastructure has to be upgraded for us, regional board, state board, to be in that dialogue to make sure that water quality can be protected and more sustainable. And then also, the Elkhorn Slough Foundation has been very successful in leveraging the investment of state funds to gather other funding. And they raised upwards of $30 million based on a few million of state investment. And that's something we're, more than ever interested in, how we can leverage the State Water Board's funding mechanisms to create more investment in the water, the clean water infrastructure, the whole thing, the gray infrastructure, the green infrastructure. So that was a very enriching experience. There's a lot going on at the state in terms of the water resources, and I just gave a liaison report to North Coast Water Board a couple weeks ago, and I was joking around a little bit. We're going to go way up high altitude, with this liaison report. So fasten your seat belts. We're going to 35,000 feet. There's a lot going on. And I'll touch on some of that. I don't want to take all day because I could. But let's get down to something. We just had the annual report on state revolving fund. Okay. And we talk about the disadvantaged communities and trying to get funding for water and wastewater infrastructure. And on November 19th, extended term financing in the state revolving fund program was approved by the state board for all California communities. Now, this is interesting dynamic because we offered this about 5 or 6 years ago to disadvantaged communities. That is, instead of a 20-year term for the loan, it'd be a 30-year term, which significantly reduces the monthly payments. And we made that available for disadvantaged communities. And it appears at this point that the pent-up demand that was there has sort of tapered. Now, I realize disadvantaged communities aren't necessarily right, paying attention to every last detail what funding's available. But EPA and CASA, the Sanitation Agency Association, they were both supporting this, because this is one of the tools in our toolbox at the State Water Board that we can use to move funding from the Clean Water SRF to communities. So this is another incentive for people to get these loans, to do the work that we want to see done. One aspect of the program, I'll give you a couple numbers. You know, last year we moved $341 million in SRF funding. And of the $341 million, $40 million was principal forgiveness or grants. You know, we have to make sure we have a stellar credit rating, you know, for our SRF program at the State Water Board. We need to maintain that. But within that constraint, we are exploring ways to do things like principal forgiveness, just as long as we remain financially sound. So we're walking the talk in terms of trying to make funding more available. And also, I may have reported on this, but we're doing everything we can to make the application process easier, too. And in the end, why is this? Well, we've got a lot of funds available. We really do. And I was asking questions about, I mean, millions of dollars, folks, millions of dollars. And I was asking the question, well, why aren't we moving more money to non-point source type programs? And the answer there was, well, there has to be a revenue stream that matches, you know, to be able to qualify for the loans. Mm. So that's it's a systemic issue in our state. It relates to Prop 218, where there's an uneven playing field in terms of infrastructure agencies' ability to raise funds. Water and sewer have a lower bar to cross to raise revenue relative to things like urban runoff and flood control. So those are issues that I'm real interested in working with local folks to come up with solutions from a governance standpoint. But that said, you know, those are the type of things we need to put into place to facilitate our ability to move the millions of dollars that we have in the SRF program. Are you all familiar with the receiving water limits issue in the stormwater permits? It's kind of a come to more of a head in the larger urban areas of the state, the LA region, the San Diego region, San Francisco Bay region. But it's an issue that touches on every regional board. Here, your implementation of the Phase 2 general stormwater permit for municipal separate sewer systems is sort of the vehicle where you'll be looking at this. Well, we had a very long workshop on October 3rd where we received feedback on a stormwater permitting approach by the Los Angeles Water Board, which has been appealed to the State Water Board. It deals with the issue of receiving water limits. A state board precedential order about 12 years ago provided standard language for these MS4 permits that discharges of municipal stormwater shall not cause or contribute to violations of water quality standards. Now, recent court decisions interpreting this language have caused statewide concerns in municipalities and Caltrans that they may be open to legal action if the standards for bacteria, metals, other pollutants aren't met in water quality samples, monitoring for permits. So at the hearing, we heard testimony from a wide variety of parties and viewpoints. The LA Regional Board and the LA Flood Control District defended an approach that the LA Board has put forward, determining that municipalities are in compliance with receiving water limitations if watershed management plans, or alternatively, enhanced watershed management plans based on low impact development throughout a watershed are developed and implemented on a strict timeline. Okay, so this is the idea that a pathway to compliance with the receiving water limits involves dealing with the systemic issues in the urban watersheds that would eventually enable compliance with standards over time. So it's interesting discussions that went on. The regional board and the flood control district argued that a path to compliance that they've put forward is under appeal to us, so I can't get into too much detail. But they argued that it's created enough space for parties to work together creatively to develop infrastructure-based plans that are designed to achieve water quality standards by utilizing those low-impact development techniques like detention, retention, percolation, transpiration, green streets, you know, green parking lots, strategically located BMPs in an urban watershed. So we also heard from San Diego, and we heard from San Francisco Bay region stakeholders. But this issue touches every region and urban stormwater runoff and this challenge that we have of attaining water quality standards. So we're very interested in this region's input and wisdom and experience as well. I just want to make sure you weren't left out of that discussion. So, anyway, thanks for indulging me on that. Drinking Water Reorganization Task Force. As Dr. Hunter alluded to, I'm thrilled that you all are being so involved in this issue, Board Member Johnston as well. I thought I'd maybe let you in on a little of the inner workings. There's an internal task force. You've been involved in the external task force, which is critical. But there's a nuts and bolts thing going on here. You know, how do you move the Drinking Water Division under the State Water Board? How do you get from point A to point B? So our staff, led by our very capable Liz Haven, are participating in internal and external task forces to achieve integration of the drinking water program under State Water Board by July 1st, 2014. So with the AB 145 failing to be passed by the legislature, the governor announced on October 8th that the drinking water program will be moved to the State Water Board, and that he wants regulations for potable reuse of recycled water to be expedited. And he made this message very clear when he signed AB 322. So on Wednesday, November 13th, just to give you a little insight to the mechanism going on here, Chair Felicia Marcus and I attended a half-day meeting where Department of Public Health, Drinking Water Division staff, and State Water Board staff discussed three specific program areas and our different approaches. It was kind of an information sharing. Just because we do things different doesn't mean the other division has to start doing things the way we do it, because they're different issues. So we drilled down in the issues of emergency response, operator certification in water and wastewater, which is an interesting issue, and fee structures of the different agencies for water and wastewater agencies. These task force meetings are attended by a range of interested parties, from environmental justice interests and interests of the law of the human right to water on that end, ranging over to the CCLHO, which is a coalition of local environmental health agencies, who continue to officially oppose this transition. They're holding on to, you know, they're used to a certain way of doing things and are concerned about change, and we respect that. But they have acknowledged the failure of our state's drinking water state revolving fund and have indicated they would, at this point, support only moving that piece under the State Water Board. But as we hold these task force meetings and get into the details of this transition, it's my impression that the county representatives are becoming less apprehensive about the change. See, the state board members, for what it's worth, we continue to emphasize that we can continue to handle most drinking water matters administratively, okay? We don't have to disrupt the delivery of safe drinking water in emergency response to all Californians. And don't need to disrupt the lives of the staff of the Drinking Water Division. We're going to be involved in more of the controversial items that would benefit from more transparency and public discussion. Such as, I'll give you an example, the MCL for hexavalent chromium. You know, that's an example of something that will come before the board. But other matters can continue to be handled as they're handled now. The field office structure can more or less remain as it is. Certainly, if there are opportunities that make sense to combine with regional board offices, we would look at that. But I haven't been made aware of any specific examples. So I think, you know, in principle, I would offer my support for this move because it integrates water management at the state level and provides a more direct lifeline for the drinking water program to an upper management structure. In the DPH org chart, I've often, you know, in the hallways when people ask me about this, you know, I see it as an org chart issue. Because drinking water division is sort of down here in the basement of the org chart in DPH, because they're dealing with life-threatening issues, you know, hospitals, AIDS, you know, you name it. So that's where lives are imminently at stake. Under the State Water Board, the drinking water program will receive more management support and will be more transparent in our board decision-making system. So some have said it's going to be more political under the State Water Board. I respectfully disagree. It's less susceptible to political influence than a departmental system, and because of the decision-making that happens in the public forum. So I've spoken to some drinking water staff. I generally get a positive impression because it will better empower drinking water protection and help implement the human right to water. So I could go on and on and on. I just want to make you aware of two initiatives that are going on right now. It's on our State Water Board website that I think folks should weigh in on. And there's the Groundwater Strategic Work Plan. Okay, the Groundwater Strategic Work Plan. There's a white paper, a 10-pager that we put out about how we can integrate our groundwater protection programs throughout the state and the regions. And then there's the California Water Action Plan. Have you heard of this?
Mm-hmm. We commented on it.
Good. Yeah. In other words, comments were due at the end of November. Of course, they're still coming in, and they would still be accepted. And there have been a few changes to it. So if it's worthwhile, I'll get into those a little bit here. So we're meeting with stakeholders around the state to discuss these two documents, which take on big-picture issues that have emerged more acutely because of 2013 being the driest calendar year on record. Mm-hmm. You know, first, there's this 10-page white paper on the Groundwater Strategic Work Plan. Now, this idea was first discussed a couple of years ago at the WQCC. I think most of you may have been there.
Yeah.
It was the 2011 mm-hmm. WQCC. And then the 2012 WQCC, we focused more on the integrated water management framework. And it's, you know, these are changes, and they're leading us, I think, to integrate our regions and the state better. So I attended when I was on the San Francisco Bay Water Board at that Groundwater Strategic Work Plan meeting. Mm-hmm. Now, embedded in the work plan are what, let's just distill it down. There's five elements of a properly functioning groundwater management program, whether it's at the local, regional, or state level. And these five elements are sustainable thresholds for quality and quantity. Number one, threshold. Number two, water quality and water level monitoring and assessment. Number three, governance structures with management mechanisms that prevent impacts before they occur and clean up contamination as needed. Okay, governance. Four, funding to support monitoring and governance. Five, oversight and enforcement in basins where ongoing actions are not protecting groundwater. Thresholds, monitoring assessment, governance, funding, oversight, enforcement. A board member, D.D. Diadamo, and I met with the Association of California Water Agencies, AQUA, about a month ago to receive feedback on this work plan. And groundwater overdraft is frustrating water managers around the state. And we're seeing unprecedented cooperation on this issue from AQUA of the state playing a role. A couple of years ago, they would not have entertained such a cooperative strategy meeting. And state regulation of groundwater levels has historically been a third rail where it hasn't been on the table. Of course, it's worth noting that we are the only state of the 50 states that don't regulate groundwater pumping. AQUA members are having difficulty with counties that make land use decisions and approve well installations that are not integrated with water agency programs at the local level and have led to overdraft in Central Valley and here in the Central Coast region. So, you know, I know everyone's aware of that around here. It's close to home. You know, other parts of the state, though, on the groundwater issue, like Southern California, emphasize that there's a priority there that's more cleaning up groundwater, contaminated groundwater, so it can be put to beneficial use and local storage. So it's not just all about the overdraft issue. Okay, the groundwater has got a lot of work, moving parts. So I'll just let you know, feedback to date has been positive, supportive of this five elements idea that I just described. It's a promising sign for improved cooperation and hopefully better protection and recovery of groundwater resources. You know, it's my impression that the more we communicate that we at the state and regional boards understand how heterogeneous groundwater basin characteristics are, and that different basins will have different quantitative thresholds based on physical properties and precipitation, the more confidence people will have in the state being able to establish a consistent framework that is adaptable to highly variable local conditions. So it's not a matter of the state coming in and running the show. It's a matter of the state supporting the locals that are running the show.
Steve, is there any legislation being drafted to address the five principles, or
I think that that's not really where we're at, even though we can do legislative concepts. But I know there's interest in that, and you correctly point out that that's one of the many things, the moving parts that has to be addressed if we're going to move to that step. But there are existing authorities within the Constitution to prevent waste and unreasonable use that we use very judiciously. You know. So, with that, I mean, I actually could entertain any questions on that. Maybe we can
any board questions?
We'll just continue to meet with folks and engage on those issues. California Water Action Plan. You know, just real quickly, this was an effort with Cal EPA, Natural Resources Agency, and Department of Food and Agriculture. So this is the governor's office trying to get the agencies to get together and align better, which is something we're working at Sacramento, and really take to heart the need for state agencies to align our programs. If we want people to integrate at the local level, we have to align at the state level. I believe that. So we were involved in this. Chair Felicia Marcus and Executive Director Tom Howard actively contributed to this 20-page document that is actually going to be reformulated. It was called the Action Plan. It's not really an action plan, though, truthfully. It's more of an agenda. So I think that's what's going to be it's going to change its name. And in the end, it's an issue framing document for funding priorities. It shows intent of state agencies aligning their programs to pursue this range of principles in any actions they take. So it came out of the Resources Agency, which is, you know, includes Department of Water Resources and Fish and Wildlife and those folks. So it has that tilt, but it's pretty specific in some areas. And so you've commented on it, so I don't have to go into great detail, but there were 10 actions or, you know, issue areas, and number one, number two, and number 10 were ones where we got state water board issues in there pretty briefly, but importantly. Mm-hmm. Number one was the conservation as a California way of life. And number two was increasing local and regional self-reliance. You know, we highlight our contributions to these because of our interest in moving integrated water management forward. And then there's another bullet, which was protect and restore important ecosystems. You know, in the document, you see us pledging to work with Department of Fish and Wildlife to enhance water flows and stream systems statewide and restore coastal watersheds with some quantified, if modest, commitments. So, and then the number 10 priority was identify sustainable and integrated financing opportunities. Mm. And there we elevate the issue of going beyond voter-approved bond funding and restructuring water rates. So and other mechanisms for directing resources to infrastructure improvements that are more broad, recognizing clean water infrastructure is not just pipes, pumps, and plants, but also drainage infrastructure, as well as wetlands, riparian corridors, green streets, green parking lots, green roofs. So I encourage you to, I'm glad that you've participated in this. We want you in this dialogue. And it's been generally positive. There's a little BDCP fatigue out there, you know, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. And there's concern that this governor, this administration is too focused on that. And I'm hoping, you know, that this document helps to quell that concern. You know, that California water is not all tied up in the Delta and its proceedings. You know, I'm always struck, though, by how the Delta is a macrocosm, you know, for the challenges and balancing acts of beneficial uses of water that plays out in various forms throughout our state, you know, such as here in the Salinas River, Pajaro River, Santa Maria River, Santa Ynez River. You know, you're dealing with some very similar issues where people live and work in the landscape and the effort it takes to preserve clean water, safe drinking water, and a natural heritage in parallel with industrial, commercial, and agrarian activities. But it can be done with collaboration, compromise, and commitment to future generations. So thank you for participating in these initiatives, and we really want the regional board, all regional boards, to feel that they see themselves in these efforts.
So thanks. Steve, what's the next step with the Water Action Plan, because it's really an agenda. It's like a list of talking points.
Yeah.
And something concrete needs to happen at some point.
Yeah, it will be re-released based on comment. There's going to be some additions on headwaters protection and things like that. It'll be released as an agenda, but it's like a five-year time horizon. These are the things we're going to work on. But your point's well taken. You know, it's a little vague, and there needs to be something, a little more of a commitment put out. So there's discussion about what's going to happen in the next 6 months, you know, given everything that's going on in our state with water resources. Mm-hmm. And so I think you'll see this. You'll see this release not changed a whole lot, and then you'll see a more, you know, what are we going to do in the next 6 months to deal with the drought and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Mr. Jeffries.
Dr. Moore, you talked about disadvantage of areas and money available to them. And you also mentioned that now the loans will be from 20 years to 30 years. Is that correct? And what is the interest rate on this? A change from the 20 to 30?
It continues to be. We do an analysis in this annual report where we calculate a subsidy that we're providing by lower interest rates. But the interest rate doesn't change. It's just that the monthly payments change by extending the term. So the interest rates are low, though. The subsidy we provide is when we compare what's out there on the market compared to what our low interest loans.
Is the rate fixed, or is it go by the going rate to the general public?
This is a little outside of my knowledge area, but it's fixed, I believe, because otherwise if it were variable, it wouldn't be.
My next question then would be, are there grants other than loans?
Yeah, you know, what we're doing is, within the constraints of maintaining our really high financial standing, we find a way to make grants out of this, too. It's called principal forgiveness. So it's like,
okay,
and we use disadvantaged community type benchmarks to make those decisions.
My last question is on moving the drinking water department from the health department to the state water board. And what do you see in the future for the regional boards and their actions in that, or are we going to be any part of that?
Well, that's a good question. I think what I was trying to emphasize there in my remarks was I don't see anything major happening, because currently I used to be a regional board staffer, and there was a certain cooperative relationship we had with Division of Drinking Water, and I don't see that changing. You know, but there will be opportunities by being under one agency to seek synergies. And I think one example that's probably coming to everyone's mind is the area of recycled water. and better linking up the regulations to use it, and dealing with that tension of protecting the environment from recycled water and yet encouraging the use of recycled water, right? So I think we'll make strides in recycled water.
Question?
Bruce.
Steve, thanks for being here today. You started talking about the Water Quality Coordinating Committee that we all made comment on, and at the very tail end of that, it was a little rushed because it was over, and Fran was trying to get to the next steps. Where do we go from here? It wasn't really accomplished very well, but not to her, just wasn't really possible. But before the next meeting, a year from now, do you think there's any follow-up steps that can be done to try to encapsulate the consensus that may have been in the room to work on certain things and kind of bring them to some fruition, or do we just let it drift?
Oh, yeah. This is you're not alone in that comment, in terms of could we make the WQCC have more of a deliverable? Could we even pass some kind of resolution or so I think moving to next year, and Chair Young, tell me if I'm wrong, but the chairs meeting, you talk about the WQCC for the upcoming.
We do.
Yeah. And so that's a place where some details can be worked out on the next steps. But let's talk about how if we want to make things a little more formalized than they have been. I think our impression is the WQCC is doing a good job given all your discussion about it, and that these concepts are weighing them as your day-to-day work comes before you. Mm-hmm. But to the extent that it would be valuable for us to have consensus statements come out of that, I think we're open to that idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would be especially interested in into trying to ensure that what we learned and what we seem to have some agreement on, where work needed to be done to improve what we do, that we follow up with some actions.
Action.
I'm not thinking so much resolutions necessarily, more, how do we use that information to input it where appropriate in what we're doing, mm-hmm. without just losing it, and then we go on to the next topic for next year. And
yeah, I hear you. So maybe an action item, somehow us cycling back, maybe even in the regional reports, about how the principles that were discussed have been implemented.
Yeah, what did we learn? What are we going to do about it,
mm-hmm.
basically?
Okay. I think I missed the last chair's conference call, and I should check in with Fran to see what was discussed, because this might have come up, because it would have been the first one at post-WQCC, and typically Fran gets input, and there's follow-up suggestions made. So I'll have to look into that and report back on what, if anything, was discussed and maybe put forth.
Yeah, so. I thought Fran had a good idea, saying normally we leave these events without wrapping it up and making something happen from them. So she tried to get that started, and I just want to support that.
Okay, good.
Good.
All right.
I'll bring that back to her.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Moore?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could, Chair Young, I just want to thank Dr. Moore for taking time and joining us. You have been able to attend a number of field site tours, and we really appreciate having you travel to our region and take what you learned back to the state board and help bring those issues into definition as you are working on groundwater issues and disadvantaged community issues and the safe drinking water issues that I've been involved with. We do appreciate your time and effort and commitment.
Well, thank you. Feeling's mutual. And I'm actually not a doctor. I just play one on TV.
You're an engineer, right? Okay. All right. We had forgotten to mention that we went on the field trip, Delcorn Slough. Okay. All right.